Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm your host, Ray Graff. We'll be discussing birds today. Always fun when Rich Guthrie is here. Comes here about once a month. He's a veteran birder, former NCON specialist, and one-time compiler, actually for a long time, of the Catskill New York Christmas Bird Count for the National Audubon Society. Rich is our resident expert on birds. Love to have him here. The number to call is 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You can also comment on the Vox Pop page of our website. It's wamc.org/voxpop. You can check in via Facebook at facebook.com/wamcradio, or you can tweet us, wamcvoxpop, or email voxpop@wamc.org. But we recommend that you give us a call and do it early. 1-800-348-2551 is that number. Rich Guthrie, welcome back, my friend. Nice to see you.
Hey, nice to be here.
You have a new book here with you.
Oh, yeah. Well, let me tell you, about the bird world, what's going on out there right now.
Yeah.
The families are out. The young are coming off the nest, and they're learning how to fly. They're learning how to find food for themselves. Yeah. And they're getting a lot of help from mom and pop along the way. So there's a whole hustle and bustle of activity going on. And well, one of our favorite groups of birds, the warblers.
Yes.
These are the ones we look forward to in the spring, the butterflies of the bird world.
Mm-hmm.
Very colorful little birds that come up from the tropics, spend the late spring and summer with us, and then turn around and head back down again.
Sure.
And some of the things we like about them is, number one, that they're very colorful. They're a challenge to find and identify. But it becomes even more so this time of year because the young don't look like the adults.
Ah.
And this is one of those challenging aspects of birding, is identifying these little critters and then, you know, enjoying who's around. And I will say that they are moving around. For the first time this year, I've had yellow warblers in my yard. Now you say, well, so what's that? Well, they're moving. They're migrating. We're beginning the fall migration of these songbirds back to the tropics. Mm-hmm. Here we are. And the young are moving along with the adults. And there is a new book out there that I really like to it's called The Warbler Guide.
Yes.
And basically what it is a whole bunch of information about all the warblers that we have around.
In different phases of life
I want to talk about comparison of plumages. This one here, it got close-ups of various details of the various warblers and how to identify them, where you might find them, what they sound like. You got pictures of them, what they look like if you're looking straight up.
Oh, brilliant. No, that's brilliant. Yeah.
Yeah, right. You don't always get to look at them, profile on the ground.
Sure.
And you're looking up in a canopy of a tree, and there's something up there. Well, this has ways to identify those things. One of my favorite spots that I've been to is a place in Canada called Point Pelee.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is you're standing on a spot where there's a concentration of migrant birds coming over, and they're flying out over this point. So you're identifying many of them. Of course, a lot of them come down and land on the ground and in bushes and
sure.
what have you. But a lot of them are flying overhead. And it's a real challenging and, in fact, informative aspect of birding is these people up there, they've gotten used to this, and they can tell a black-throated green from a Cape May, you know, high up in the air looking at it from underneath. Well, this book has some of those identification techniques in there as well.
And what is the title once again?
Warbler, The Warbler Guide.
Okay.
Princeton University
that
Press.
It's like a quality softbound, or is it a hardbound?
Tell you. No, it's a soft cover book, but it's quality for sure. And it's got all kinds of things in it. But it's just coming out. Tom Stevenson and Scott Whittle, two good birders are out there. And just in time for the fall migration, the majority of the warblers and other bird species will not look like the pictures in most of the bird guides.
Ah, very interesting indeed. Now, you know, Rich Guthrie is our guest. And Rich, you know, I was out in the backyard yesterday or day before, and we have lots of crows in our neighborhood.
Ah, lucky you.
And they were in a tree, tall tree, not too far, maybe a couple of houses over. And they all made noise at once, loud, very loud, tons of them. Then they would stop for a moment,
mm-hmm.
and then they would start again.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, what's going on? Why would they do that?
Crows.
They did it over and over again.
Crows have their ways. And they're all agitated right now. This is a time of year when the crows which up till now have been off in their own little territorial realms that they have had, they begin to gather up in these groups of crows.
Yeah.
And it's part of the group interaction. And one will start crowing, and the rest of them will join in. And then, as you say, they'll quiet down.
For just a moment, and then they'll start again.
Maybe that somebody just hiccuped or just kind of like a thought of a funny joke.
So it wasn't in response to a threat. I mean, that was my initial...
Sometimes it is, but you'll see that will... that will generate a lot of movement as well.
Yeah.
No. Aside from, crows are very active as it is. And I love watching them when they're in this group setting, because you get a lot of hopping around and flying around, but not the agitated, there's a hawk over here.
Right.
Where you'll get two or three of them go up there and start mobbing, as they call it, going after the hawk to try to drive them out of their territory. They don't get along well with hawks.
So they're just having fun. Or chatting it up.
I like to think they're having fun.
Okay.
They're just kind of socializing, just remembering of the past stories and bringing them back again
right.
And talking about the ones who aren't there.
I like it. 1-800-348-2551 is our number. Rich Guthrie is our guest. Birds is the topic. Let's go to Charles in Huntington, Mass. Charles, you're on.
Yes, thank you very much, Rich and Ray. The question I have regarding the forest fires that we hear and see, and chagrined about, of course, with the loss of the firefighters' lives. But what about not only the animals, but the birds? How do they know ahead of time? Are they able to escape? You never hear about that.
Well, you wouldn't, because I think when we're talking about, as you point out, when we're talking about forest fires, we're talking about serious stuff out there, and there's a lot of serious consideration. Well, first of all, forest fires are essentially a natural component of nature. They happen over the millennia, and birds and animals do adapt to it. You have certain animals, for example, that will burrow into the soil to escape the heat of a forest fire. Right in our area, in the Albany area of New York, we have the pine bush.
Sure.
And that has some specially adapted animal and species that will burrow into the soft sand of the dunes that are in the Albany pine bush. Very unique adaptations, too. The hog-nosed snake has a little shovel on the tip of his nose that he uses to get into the soil.
Mm-hmm.
And the spadefoot toad has a little shovel on the back of his hind feet that he uses to burrow backwards into the sand to escape the heat. Birds, they're going to have to fly to get out of it. Many of the birds can and do. Any nests that are in that vicinity will obviously be destroyed. Anybody who's confined to the nest, the nestlings or the eggs, will not be able to make it out.
Mm.
So there is a toll, but it's part of the natural fires are part of the succession that this inhabitants have adjusted to over time. Unfortunately, there is, as you suspect, I believe, will be a very high toll.
Well, it was interesting hearing an interview with the professor of forestry at the Arizona University, and what he talked about was there's been a restriction on timber harvesting. I have a large tree farm,
mm-hmm.
and I know what they go through on the state of Massachusetts and others where they don't timber harvest. And as he said, the fuel on the ground, the trees that die out and choke, is so much deeper than it used to be.
No question.
That the heat goes so down far, goes so far into the ground that it just kills any chance of regeneration and builds up that heat that otherwise would go up to the crowns and be a fire on the top, not on the ground.
Well, you're right about that. Yeah, we're looking at that where the whole Smokey the Bear thing was a good idea, but it has backfired, so to speak, on us.
Yeah.
Charles, we're going to move it along here, but thank you very much for the call. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie is our guest. It's our bird show for the month. Susan and Niskayuna, you're on.
Hi. I have a question about blackbirds. I had a flock of blackbirds in my yard, and they were picking around and getting insects out of the grass, but there were a number of them laying flat, with their wings spread out, and they would just be still for the longest time. Not all of them did it, just a few of them. What are they doing?
Well, they're actually what we used to call them sun worshippers. Sunbathing. Yeah. And it's funny you should mention, and thank you for bringing that up, because, and I'll mention that I do have a blog in the Albany Times Union, and I was observing that the other day and was getting some photographs of birds doing that very same thing. And
is it only blackbirds or other birds?
No, all of them across the spectrum. In fact, it's almost comical to watch, to see these birds as they're sort of in a animated or a suspended state of animation, as they're laying sideways with their wings sort of flopped over in a casual, lazy fashion, as if they're, you know, a little intoxicated and laying on the couch soaking up the sun.
How about that?
Well, I thought maybe I had something in my yard I should really know about and partake of myself.
Well, you do, but, you know, with now we're taking a second look at this bathing in the sun. But yes, you're right. Now the function of it I don't know that it's fully understood. But one of the thoughts is that it helps decrease the amount of parasites they have on them. Yeah, they all have little mites.
Sure,
they have
sure.
Little, and there's some thought that this helps get rid of that. And there's also vitamin D absorption, which I don't know how.
Through the feathers? Really?
I know. I just read that this morning.
Okay, and, all right.
Well, I'm current, aren't I?
Yes, you are, Susan. Well done.
You are right on it. And you're going to see that in the blog. I'm going to put some of those pictures out there.
Okay.
Oh, I'll look for that.
All right,
then. And I'll look for some other birds.
Yep.
Thanks,
you go,
Susan.
Susan.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
What is your blog again?
Times Union. TimesUnion.com/birding.
Okay. We'll be back with Rich Guthrie. More of your calls at 800-348-2551.
Support comes from Earth Angels Veterinary Hospital, Wappingers Falls, an integrative facility that combines conventional and holistic medicine for a 360-degree approach to veterinary care. EarthAngelsVet.com. Stories Nursery, Freehold, New York, featuring a variety of hydrangeas and an assortment of perennials and annuals, Monday through Sunday, 8 to 5, a gardener's destination. StoriesNursery.com. Oblong Books, presenting The League of Extraordinary Readers for ages 8 through 12. Featuring authors Kristen Kitcher, Michael Buckley, and Kirsten Miller. Sunday, July 14th at 4 p.m., RSVP requested. Oblongbooks.com. Lexington Vacuum, Albany, New York. Featuring Miele, Simplicity, Dyson, Electrolux, Vapori, Vapor Cleaning, Sales Service, and Repairs. LEXIVAC.com. And Mohawk Trail Concert Summer Festival. Hosting William Bolcombe's Violin Sonatina and Joan Morris recalling Edith Piaf. July 12th and 13th at the Federated Church in Charlemont. MohawkTrailConcerts.org.
One 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. Rich Guthrie is our guest. It's birds, and Patrick Don just flew in with something from somewhere.
Hello, my arms are tired.
Hey,
Robert on Facebook says wild turkeys. Since we moved into the Capital District in 75, we've seen increasing numbers of turkeys, particularly the last 5 years or so. We've lived in Columbia County since 1980 and hear coyotes and other predators. Still, the numbers of turkeys keep rising. Why? Last spring through fall, we were visited daily by 2 hens and 7 chicks. This year, the same, but with only 6 chicks. Also, why don't we see them during the winter months?
Okay, this is great.
Okay. If you are in the right place at the right time, you'll see them in the winter.
Okay.
Turkeys were once fairly common throughout the Northeast. Then they would, they disappeared, extirpated through forest habitat changes, agricultural uses, and to the point where they were eliminated for the most part. Since the 1950s or so, they started making a comeback, mainly on their own, but with a little bit of help from a few friends in the Environmental Conservation Department, boosted them along a little bit through a few more turkeys out there to help seed the crop, and they proliferated.
Wonderful.
They found a vacuum in nature, filled it up
with
success. Now they're running into various hard times. The population curve is pretty well flattened out. natural predation and climatic factors such as cold, wet springs, very harsh winters mm-hmm. might take their toll, but the numbers are they're successfully reestablished in our area. Okay. And they like our backyards.
Okay. All right, excellent.
Well, is that all you have?
That's it.
Patrick Dodges, ladies and gentlemen.
Thanks, John.
Thank you, Patrick. We appreciate your help. Back to the phones we go with Rich Guthrie, and I guess it's Maria's turn in Olive Bridge. Hi, Maria.
Hi. There have been a lot of fledglings around this year, more than usual. We had robins at one point, and then a wren had there was a wren nest, and I didn't even know it was there. It was in the in a hollow in a post in my carport.
I think you have to turn that radio down just a little bit, Maria, because we're hearing you come back.
Okay, is that better?
Yep, that'll be great. Yep.
Okay. So anyway, so the wrens fledged this weekend, and we think it was a Carolina wren. And as the babies came out of the nest under my carport, they started fluttering all around, landed on my car, on a garbage bag, and they made it. They made it out into the woods. However, there's another nest in a grapevine nearby, and it seems like it's a wren. It's a tiny bird, but it's in the shadows of the grape leaves, and I can't really get a look at the mother or the father. It's somewhat similar to the other bird, but when I go near the nest, instead of making a racket, it kind of sounds like very quietly. I don't know. Did you hear that?
Very quietly, and no, I didn't really. Did you hear that, Ray?
It's kind of a tsk, tsk, tsk.
Well, they do that as an alarm to get your attention.
But what I'm saying is it's a different sound than the other wren. So
it's probably a different species, something else other than a wren.
Okay. So it has it's a tiny, slim bird. It has a reddish-brown cap on the top of its head. It's about the size of a wren, and it has white stripes on either side of its head. And it has some striping on its wings, and it has a grayish-white chest.
Okay, it sounds to me, yes, a different species. Sounds like it may be what's called a chipping sparrow. And that would account for that sound that it was making. And they also like to nest near houses. They're very comfortable being near people. And to me, check out chipping sparrow, and I think that's who your neighbor is.
I will. The only thing is, I think of sparrows as being a little chubbier or round.
Now this is a different kind of sparrow. This is a little guy that's uh-huh. not related to the common sparrow that we think of, the house sparrow.
Well, that sounds exactly right on. Thank you very much.
Hey, Maria, thank you very much. 1-800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie is our guest. It's Diane in North Adams. Hi, Diane.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
All right.
Good. My question is about crows.
Mm-hmm.
I do like birds, and I love listening to them in the morning. However, I'm not particularly fond of listening to the crows.
Uh-huh.
Is there a way to get them to leave the vicinity of my house?
Afraid not.
No.
There's no?
Yep.
Great.
Lucky you, huh?
Yeah,
I love crows.
I do, too. So, I'm going to take their side in this story.
Aw, my husband loves them, too. They're intelligent, they're cool, they're whatever.
Yep,
but me, they're just a little too loud for all the other birds.
Well,
I can't hear them.
Well, soon they'll be gone.
Really?
They'll move
on. Do they?
Yeah.
Okay.
They'll move down to Troy, and then we'll hear from the people in Troy, New York. Talking.
So you wouldn't
about
recommend she get a tiger or anything like that?
Well, you can't. No, you can't. Not in Massachusetts.
Not really.
But,
okay.
No, you'll just, all I can do is suggest is learn to love them. Join the club.
We'll try.
All right,
okay, Diane.
All right,
Diane, sorry about that. It wasn't the answer you wanted to hear,
but we
tell it like it
exactly.
is.
Exactly. Let's go to Liz in Turner's Falls. Liz, you're on.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a bird feeding problem. In the winter and the early spring, I shovel off the roof of my first floor porch from the second floor window, and I just throw the bird seed out. I've been doing this for about 15 years, and all the little birds come, nothing larger than a blue jay, really. And early this spring, pigeons started coming, and they just took over, and they sit on my neighbor's roof peak like gargoyles, and I know she doesn't like it. And I don't know what to do. I know that a woman way down the street feeds pigeons.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how they've managed to get up here this year because she's been feeding them for years. And my fear is that I won't be able to feed the smaller birds any more winters. And I was wondering if you had any suggestions. I mean, I stopped feeding them.
Well, don't do that. Just change your mode of feeding. Pigeons like to feed off the ground, and that's what they do. They'll walk around and pick up stuff off the ground. So what I would suggest, if you can, is get a different kind of feeding strategy. Use specific bird feeders that pigeons will not be comfortable getting onto, but your finches and even the blue jays and cardinals and the like will be happy there.
Right.
And pigeons not.
So just hang out a lot of different feeders instead of putting it on the roof?
Yeah, do that. And then they'll go back to your other neighbor where she makes it nice and easy for them.
You can throw food on the neighbor's lawn, right?
Well,
that's another way.
That's what she does.
Yeah,
there you go.
Yeah, there you go. And they'll figure out that it's a lot easier over there. And, you know, birds are not, I don't want to say lazy, but they're opportunistic.
Okay.
Right.
And if they can simplify their ways around things, they'll do that.
So once they've been here this year, they won't forget about it next year, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. They'll love you for it, but then they'll wonder what happened, and they'll go on to their neighbors. And, it'll take them a while, and I can't guarantee that they won't come back and look for spillages and leftovers and what have you. But if you dramatically change your style, I think they will get the message and go back to the old haunts.
Fair enough.
Okay, that's great advice. Thank you very much.
Liz, okay,
thank
Liz.
Thank you very much. It's 1-800-348-2551. And we go to Lynn in Pittsfield. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about woodpeckers. I have a woodpecker on my property that is about the size of a crow. He has a red head, black wingspan, and if I remember correctly, white spots in the back of him. Is he a pleated woodpecker? And if so, can you tell me a little bit about them?
Sure. They're one of my favorite birds. They're the prototype for Woody Woodpecker.
Sure.
Just so you get a mental image of their fame. The pileated or pileated, either pronunciation is okay. It's like tomato, tomato. But they're a deep, large tree dwelling, forest dwelling bird species that has adapted to more suburban ways. And in fact, in some cases, even in urban settings. Mm-hmm. So they're great birds to watch. They're the ones that have that deep resonating call through the woods. And they're very territorial and sedentary. The young of the year will have to move out before the next nesting cycle and find a new territory. And apparently they're doing quite well, at the expense of a lot of tree-boring insects.
Hmm. Are they on the endangered species list?
Oh no, not at all. They're one of the bird species that seems to be succeeding more so than when I was starting out. There seem to be more of them now than before.
Were they ever?
No, but you may be thinking of the ivory-billed woodpecker, which is a close relative that is probably extinct by now. They were the ones of the cypress swamps of the deep south. That have been decimated through changes in the environment down there. So, they were on the endangered species list. Technically, still are, but probably don't exist anymore.
All right.
Thank you very much,
Lynn.
Okay,
thanks,
Lynn.
Now, the ivory bill. I mean, most birds. Correct me if I'm wrong, but when the climate changes or their situation changes, they just move. Are you sure the ivory bill isn't someplace else?
I'd like to think it was. It will be relocated. As you know, I was part of a Cornell University, a National Audubon Society, and Fish and Wildlife Service sponsored expedition to the swamps of the South and in search of the ivory-billed woodpecker. And I still am happy to say that while part of it, I was successful in finding at least just one of them that was existing, that was still alive. Others have seen one or perhaps two. But I'm afraid that since then, there have been no verifiable subsequent sightings. And I'm afraid that it's probably dwindled away.
Okay. All right, let's go back to the phones with Rich Guthrie. It's Willie in Selkirk. Willie, you're on.
Yes, hello. How you doing? Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm not much of a bird man, but I got this hummingbird feeder. And I got this pair of hummingbirds, and I can't find find them in the book. Now, they got a black head and like a brown, light brown ring around their neck.
Okay.
What are they?
Well, I'm going to suggest that they are ruby-throated hummingbirds that will appear... the colors of the ruby-throated hummingbird will appear distorted in various lighting situations, either backlighting or side lighting. You have to catch the colors just right, where there will be this glistening emerald green on the back and the head, and a deep ruby, deep red ruby throat, bright, almost iridescent, which, if the lighting is not just right, will appear black.
Huh.
Well, they've been like maybe 4 feet away from me.
Yes. Well, I have a suggestion, because I'll never pass up the opportunity of a rare bird visiting a backyard based on a description. So is there any chance you get a photograph of these guys?
I'm going to try to, but, you know, when I get too close, they, you know how hummingbirds are, they just... scattered.
Yeah, I know. Tell me, I'm working on getting good pictures of hummingbirds myself, but it can be done. And what I'm going to suggest is that you grab a photograph of it, because I'm going to withhold judgment. I've learned a long time ago not to second guess what people are actually seeing, mm-hmm. and I'm not. So what I'm going to urge you to do is get a photograph of it, and we'll have a way to get a hold of me later, and shoot it off to me, and we'll work on that. Now,
that's
I'll
great.
Have that. I'll have that for everybody, Willie, by next time we're back on. How's that?
Okay, I'm going to try to get a photo of it.
All right,
yes, sir.
Very good.
And
thank
I'll
you.
Have an email address for you coming up.
Okay. Why don't you do it right
you.
Now?
Okay. In fact, it's quite simple. My email address is richardpguthrie@gmail.com. And Richard P. Guthrie, all lowercase, no spaces, Guthrie. @gmail.com.
All right, fair enough. Hey, Willie, thanks a lot for the call. Let's get one more in here before the next break. Natalie in Charlton, you're on.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Thank you for the show. I really enjoy it very much. My question is about, I believe, a goldfinch. Mm-hmm. The reason I have a question is yesterday in the bush, there was this very yellow, and I believe it was a goldfinch, but it was huge.
Huge.
It was much bigger than the standard small goldfinch. One was actually at the feed, a house finch, I think, maybe, was at the feeder at the same time, you know, that usual small finch size.
Yep.
But this gold fellow was much larger than the other goldfinches I've seen. It was definitely bigger than a chickadee. So it was just unusual to me. Can they get that big?
No. Birds go to a certain size and stay there. They,
mm-hmm.
they don't go on beyond that.
So what do you think, Rich?
Well, I'm going to work on something here. Give
okay.
me a minute.
All right. I'll just whistle.
good job. What's name that tune?
All right. Rich is looking in his book. And,
I am. I'm looking it up.
All right.
I'm going to suggest you're in Charlton, which is kind of in the toehills of the Adirondacks.
Okay.
Correct. Near Saratoga Springs.
Yep.
Yes.
And there is a small population of evening grosbeaks up there. Do you think have you considered evening grosbeak?
No, I didn't, because it was just with the black mask.
Oh.
Just like a goldfinch kind of has. And
so it
has
a black
you.
Mask. I see. Okay.
Uh huh. Definitely had. It definitely looked like black around the eyes, particularly.
I think Rich has it.
Well, I'm going to suggest, Natalie, that you check out evening grosbeak.
Okay.
And let's see if that fits.
Let's see.
Oh, you're going to
Okay, you're looking up.
All right, let's all whistle.
I'm looking it up now. Yes.
Right, fair enough. We have time. Go right ahead.
That's okay. Go ahead. No, I will look that
Are
up
you sure?
and thank you. And I appreciate the contribution to my trying to figure out what this bird is.
Okay, go for it. And if it's not that, once again, get a picture.
And Natalie, you have to call us next bird show, and let us know if he was right.
Very good.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay.
1-800-348-2551 is the number. Everybody's got a book. I don't have a book. What's going on with that? Patricia in Northchester, you're on. Hello. Hi.
Yes, I'm here. I actually, the question I have is kind of a silly question. I have a car that's parked outside, and I have a side window, a mirror, that a red cardinal keeps looking at himself in it all the time.
Narcissism.
And he keeps pooping on my car the whole time.
Oh, boy.
So I'm trying to figure out what I can do to stop him doing that. He keeps viewing himself in the mirror.
Okay. A simple solution that may work for you, and I hope it does for your sake and the Cardinals, because I want you to continue to love them, and that is block the mirror image from him. And you could do that on a temporary basis by putting a bag over the mirror, so that he can't see his reflection. And
perfect.
Yeah, and take it off before you drive out onto the
highway. I'll tell you what I did just briefly, and I don't know if it's going to work. I have an iron sculpture of an owl, and I put it on top of my car.
Nah.
So I don't know.
Nah, they'll use that as a handy perch.
Oh, really? Okay. They won't.
They'll get over
they
that.
They won't buy that. Huh?
Okay.
All right.
Thank you. That's a great idea.
Okay, thanks, good luck with that.
We appreciate the call. 1-800-348-2551 is our number. Rich Guthrie is our guest. We hit the home stretch with more bird calls coming up.
Support comes from Molly Cantor Pottery Studio and Gallery, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts, featuring pottery with images of plants, animals, and New England life. Offering clay classes and gift certificates, mollycantor.com. Veterinary Emergency and Specialty Hospital, South Deerfield, Massachusetts, providing ophthalmology, surgery, and internal medicine services for dogs and cats, now offering laser eye surgery. VESHDeerfield.com. The Henyon Bakery, Amherst, since 1993, offering hearth-baked whole grain breads, pastries, birthday, wedding, and special occasion cakes, as well as gluten-free offerings. HenyonBakery.com. Foresight Land Services, Pittsfield, Massachusetts. For 45 years, offering civil engineering, land surveying, land planning, and environmental permitting to private and municipal clients in the Berkshires and Eastern New York. ForesightLand.com. And Dutch Apple Cruises, Albany, New York, announcing Wind Down Dinner Cruise, Wednesday, July 17th, featuring Italian buffet dinner and DJ. Boarding at 6, cruise from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. DutchAppleCruises.com.
It's 1-800-348-2551. The Bird Show. Rich Guthrie is here for his monthly visit. Patrick Donges, our producer, is here much more often than that, and you have stuff from social media.
Indeed.
Yes?
Amy writes to us at voxpop@wamc.org. Says, for the last 10 days, two hairy woodpeckers have been coming to my deck bird feeder. That's the tube kind, filled with black oil sunflower. One bird seemed a little clumsy, a good flyer, but not great at hanging on or gripping the feeder, so he would hop on and off and spend time perched on the railing. The same two birds came back over and over, and it looked to me that the more agile bird was eating loads of food and hopping over to the less agile bird and feeding it, kind of teaching it how to navigate life at the feeder.
Oh, nice.
The more agile bird would actually put his / her beak into the less agile bird's mouth over and over throughout the day when they came to and went away from the feeder. Is a possible that the one bird was feeding the other seed, and was it an adult feeding a youngster?
More than likely.
Okay.
Okay, I think that would probably explain it. That's what I was thinking from hearing the description.
Okay.
And they do that. The young get are able to fly out of the nest, but are still dependent on the adults for caring.
Excellent. All right. And we have a tweet from Jaina.
How appropriate.
Tweeted us at WAMC Vox Pop and said, I heard an interview on a science program with somebody who knew Walter Lantz, who said that the acorn woodpecker was his model.
Ah, okay, so you were wrong about Woody Woodpecker, and somebody wanted to let you know that it was the acorn woodpecker.
Not true?
No.
Because if you look at the cartoon characters of Woody Woodpecker, now, Walter Lantz may have had it wrong.
Yeah, maybe he had the wrong book. I mean, he didn't have the book that you and Natalie had. And,
but the picture in the book of the cartoons, now, this is real science we're getting into here.
Right, right.
Cartoon bird identification.
Yeah.
But look to me always like the Woody Woodpecker. In fact, the call that Woody Woodpecker...
Which sounds like...
Sounds to me like
violated
woodpecker.
Okay. Interesting, okay.
All right, so I don't know who to go with here.
I'll go with Rich.
Okay,
well,
fair enough.
And then you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go back and backpedal a little bit on my own and see if there is perhaps some history behind that that might explain
the Woody Woodpecker story.
We're going to get to the bottom of this Woody Woodpecker conundrum, and we'll get back to you. Let's go to April in Hyde Park. April, you're on.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. So I'm calling because I'm not the big bird person in my family. My dad is. I just reap the benefits of watching them out the window and getting the binoculars handed to me or whatever. Mm-hmm. But my dad has been building these bluebird houses that he puts around the lawn, and he did a bunch of research to get the right size hole and the right size box and put it in the right part of the lawn. And it was great. We had like a few years, we had all these bluebirds living in them, which was fabulous, you know, New York State birds represent. But then this year, a whole bunch of wrens, I'm not sure exactly what they were called. My dad was telling me about them, but some other bird kept taking over the bird houses. And as funny as it is to watch my dad running around outside trying to chase wrens out of his bird houses, I was wondering if there is some trick to keep them out so that we can have the bluebirds, because that's what we put them up for.
Well, if it were wrens, let me back up a little bit here.
I honestly can't promise you that there are wrens. My dad would be the one who would know. But whatever other bird likes to live in bluebird houses.
Well, there are several kinds, and the strategy would be different for the various types.
I got a pen.
Okay. For the wrens, you'll have to wrens like to nest in boxes, but they also like to stay close to shrubbery. They won't go far away from the nearest bush or tree. So if the box were far enough away from the tree or the bush, then the wrens will not likely occupy it. And then wrens will also, they're a very interesting little bird. And in fact, I'm glad you mentioned, because it inspires me to try to get together a little article I was going to put in my blog, which is available online, by the way, through the Albany Times Union.
Yeah.
About the wrens and a study that we can do with the wrens. But anyway, the wrens will occupy more than one nest box. They will build dummy nests or decoy nests.
Oh, yes.
Ah.
And will take over a box even if they don't intend to use it for nesting. So and they also have a dastardly side. They will go in and actually puncture the eggs of a nearby nest presumably to cut down on any competition, which may be non-existent. But,
which might explain why my dad was freaking out.
Well, yeah,
that's like the kind of thing he would know.
Yep, that they have this reputation. In fact, they have this habit of destroying other birds' nests or eggs, and then build their dummy nest on top of it. The other possibility,
like cowbirds.
No, cowbirds' behavior is a little different than that. But the house sparrow, which is an introduced bird species that will nest in boxes like that. And they also have a bad habit of killing the young that may be in there and occupying the nest on their own. And people would prefer to have bluebirds rather than the house sparrow, which in some places is considered a nuisance bird. So so they may be the other culprit. And there are some nest box designs, such as extensions that you could put on the opening that will discourage the house sparrows and still allow comfort zone for the bluebirds.
Great.
So there are techniques. And the American Bluebird Society will have, and I bet you your dad has already checked these guys out, and if not, it would be a good resource, will have an online information about both of those and different designs of nest boxes that might deter the bothersome species.
Okay.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Okay, April. Thank you.
It's Tom's turn. Tom in Milan, is it? Italy?
Milan.
Oh, Milan. Oh, you're not in Italy.
Not Milano.
Oh, I see.
No. Around here, we call it Milan.
Well, all right.
Oh, is that right? Okay. Tom in Milan.
Hey, do vultures contract rabies when they consume the body of a rabid animal?
Good question.
Negative.
Negative. That's what I thought.
Yeah. They have an incredible, well, first of all, rabies is transmitted amongst mammals. So that, you know, there's a dead end there. A fox or a dog, going after a rabid raccoon, is in big trouble.
Yep.
But the vultures and other birds, like the crows are carrion eating hawks that will take advantage of carcasses, will not contract the rabies.
Interesting.
And the vultures, I'm always amazed at what really bad food some of these scavengers will actually go after. and
I know McDonald's, everything.
Oh well, yeah, and that's high on the list. Well, it depends on what list you're talking about.
Yeah,
but you know, that skunk laying on the side of the road that you've been watching, you know, driving past for the last week,
yeah,
will be vulture chow.
Tasty.
Mm. Oh yeah, yum. They'll flock for that.
All right, Tom. Thanks a lot. Good luck. And Richard in Saratoga's up. Richard.
Hey, how are you guys? Thanks for the show. It's awesome.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
I became single about 3 years ago, and I decided to take up bird watching. And I live up in Wilton. I got a little two-acre lot and mobile home and everything. And the only problem I have with the birds is I've got this ornery woodpecker.
Mm-hmm.
He's about the size of my cat, it looks like. But I have a tin roof.
Uh-huh.
And every morning, just about the time the sun comes up, so does he.
Uh-huh.
And he finds a spot directly over my bedroom, and he goes nuts. And I know they're very intelligent birds. I put a sign up there to ask him to please wait till after 8. They will not listen.
No.
So, and I've gone out, and I've, you know, yelled at him and done everything, and he flies away, and he laughs at me a couple of minutes, and then he comes back.
Well, he knows what he's doing. He's telling you.
Absolutely.
He's saying, listen, Richard, if you're going to be a serious bird watcher, you got to get up when they do.
Apparently so, but is there really anything other than putting a new roof on the house that can be done?
Slim chance, but here's a couple of thoughts you might use.
Okay.
It ain't going to be easy because, well, first of all, what he's doing is that he's a percussionist and he's performing for his sweetheart out there. This is their love song.
I don't think she likes it.
She loves it. Otherwise, he'd give it up.
Right. Okay.
This is their tune.
Okay.
And basically they would usually use a hollow tree,
sure,
to resonate, okay, just like an old, yep, wooden drum. But they found that your tin roof works a lot better and makes him seem a lot more attractive to her. So he ain't going to give that up on his own.
Okay.
So what you might think of doing is putting a muffling fabric over where his favorite spots are. You know,
okay,
that's all I can suggest. It's perhaps some burlap or mats of material, some old rug carpeting. Good. And that's only temporary because once he sees it's not working, he's going to move on.
Wow.
Well, it's a 72-foot trailer, so he's got a lot of tin to work with.
Well, get a thatch roof. That will stop him.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, just one real quick question other than that. About 2 or 3 weeks ago, when I first moved up here, I had these two dogs every morning, and I absolutely love those animals.
You're talking ducks? Like
no, doves. Doves.
Doves. Oh, okay. Yep. Like a dove apiece. Okay.
Yes, yes. Well, I understand that they mate for life, and for about the last week and a half, I've only got the one. I don't know which one it is, male or female, but I've only got the one that's left.
Mm-hmm.
And I've actually looked for the other one to see if it, you know, had gotten hit or whatever, but I don't know, maybe they had a bad marriage or something.
Yeah, you know, she left. Sure.
I wish she'd hook up with the woodpecker.
All right, Richard, change his tune.
Yeah, thank you very
That'd
much.
That'd be an interesting offspring, but I mean, obviously, there's probably nothing I can do about it. But will they live on by themselves like that, or will they find another mate?
Usually, find another mate. It happens.
Oh, they will.
It happens a lot out there, and so he will be shopping around. Joining a singles club and
okay,
looking for, yeah, another mate, and let's wish them good luck.
Yeah, Richard, thanks a lot for the call. We go over to Don. Don is driving on the interstate. Don, I hope your hand's free here.
Yeah, no, I pulled over. I'm parked.
Okay, good.
Ooh, okay.
Okay, I spend a lot of time on I-87 in upstate New York, and I see crows, and sometimes I'll see a large group, you know, a murder of crows, or I might see one or whatever, but very often I will see three at a time, and I'm wondering, is that a male with two females or a female with two males or parents with an offspring? But I'll often see just three at a time.
Okay.
Well, you know, crows and jays, they're both related. They're both related groups of birds, do have extended families. Most birds will pair off and not tolerate others in their little bond.
Mm-hmm.
But crows and jays and a few other birds, the orioles and the like, will accept their previous young to join them in an extended family gathering. So what you may have is the current generation of both adults and a young, or generation with the offspring from prior years joining in. So,
but why three? Maybe.
Well,
just coincidence?
I think that's probably just a coincidence. Of course, you can have five or six as well. And I think three is not a magic number. It just happens to be, as Ray says, it's a coincidence.
Okay,
thanks very much. I enjoy the show.
Don,
hey,
thank you very
drive
much.
Drive safely.
Appreciate it. Let's go over to Kathy in Richmond. Kathy, you're on.
Yes, good afternoon, gentlemen. I'm very much enjoying the show. It's fascinating that so many people love birds. I think it's great. My
true.
Question, hello?
True.
Yes, we're here.
Very true. Go ahead.
Yes, okay. My question is, I work in Richmond, and there's a very popular area for viewing of quite a few family of herons. There are at least six huge nests out there, and the babies now are getting ready to leave the nest, like you say. I had two questions. Number one, is this their final family for the year, for the 2013 year, or will they have another family? And also, are these nests theirs exclusively, or how do these nests, who chooses the nest is what I'm trying to really ask. And I'm going to get off the phone and listen to your response. Thank you again for a wonderful show.
Thanks, Kathy. All right, Rich, what do you think?
Okay, a couple of things. Herons, most herons, especially the great blue heron, are colonial nesters. You'll have more than one family in a gathering building nests on top of tall dead trees, raising their young, two or three young per nest. They will use the same nest year after year, and other birds will perhaps move in. Specific other birds, such as a crow might move in and occupy the nest for its own use, a hawk or even a great horned owl may occupy one of these nests while the herons are away, that is during the next year.
Yep.
And they are, for the most part, they're single brood bird species. They're young, slow in developing. And they have all their effort to get that one generation out, that one year successful out, and then they move on.
Yeah.
So that ought to be it for the heron colony rookery there in Richmond.
Okay, very good. Let's go over to, there's an interesting call, Mike in New Lebanon. Mike, you're on.
Hi. Wonderful show. I love it.
Thanks.
This has happened to me twice and widely separated areas, once in Hancock, Massachusetts, and once over here in New Lebanon. I ride a mountain bike very, very early in the morning, just when it's light enough to see. And twice, an owl has come down over my head and actually brushed me with his wingtips and then veered off. It wasn't like he was coming after me.
Yep.
And I was wondering what causes that. Was he looking at something and I interrupted him?
Well, yes, he or she was probably nearby the nest, and you were too close to where they were nesting, and they didn't like it.
Oh.
It happens with some of most birds will do that. I had a blue jay nesting by my house, and she was fine, and I know it was the female, would be fine sitting on the nest as the eggs were hatching, as she was incubating.
Yeah.
But as soon as those eggs hatched out and their young were in the nest, she became very aggressive. And I loved it. I mean, I knew what was happening, and but she would catch me by off guard, you know, come in from behind and whoop me on the head. And I you know, it startled me. It's a good thing I wasn't carrying a basket of eggs or something.
True.
But I'd chuckle when it happened.
All right, this one comes from Sean via email. The rose-breasted grosbeak show up in May every year, almost as if on schedule in the second week. A friend told me I should take in my black oil sunflower seed feeders but by then because of bears, etc. But these birds looked hungry, and they've made a long migration. It seems cruel not to feed them. Can you please advise?
Okay. Don't worry about it.
They will make do?
They'll take care of themselves.
The dude abides.
But if you do want to enjoy observing them, keep it up. Just change technique. Make it so that the oil, the sunflower seed is not reachable by the bears. And what you could do with that is hang a feeder from a long string on a tree. You know,
yeah.
You can put a little rope pulley system in there.
Yeah.
Or out on a clothesline. And out of the reach of the bears.
Okay.
And keep it up, the grosbeaks. And then, you know, it's surprising to me that the grosbeaks would stick around. Most of the time, they come in, they raid the feeders, and then move off into the woods for the nesting season. Some places I've seen where the grosbeaks will hang around, and they become a delight.
That's what Sean says. He says, we thought it was a real coup to get them to stick around longer.
Yes, and it is. Because most folks don't have that good fortune.
We are out of time. Rich Guthrie, one more time, your contact and your blog, please.
RichardPGuthrie@gmail.com.
Yes.
And you can find me there. And the blog is blogs.timesunion.com/birding.
All right. And good luck and enjoy the new book. It looks like a real cracker.
We'll be there.
All right, my friend. Support comes from Vision XL Eye Care, Lake Katrine, New York, providing eye exams, eye care, dry eye therapy, and more. Where eyewear is an art, Facebook or visionexceleyecare.com. United Way of the Greater Capital Region, Albany, New York. Live United, give, advocate, volunteer. UnitedWayGCR.org. Curran Compliance Services, LLC, Greenwich, New York. Legal and consulting services on regulatory issues for life insurance and annuity manufacturers and distributors. CurranCompliance.com. And Country Curtains at the Red Lion Inn, Stockbridge, Massachusetts, offering ready-made window treatments for over 50 years. CountryCurtains.com. Thanks to everybody who called in. Sorry if you didn't make it through. Thanks to Zach Malloy for handling the controls. Callie Wynn Keller for answering the phones. Our producer, Patrick Donges. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's Moyers and Company at this time. And then on Monday, it's Medical Monday. Alan will be in. He'll welcome Dr. Doug Tooman. Stay tuned for that. And stay tuned now for a news update.